Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and personal watercraft. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, John Moltz is here. Hi, John.
Well, you know, the personal watercraft is the thinking man's dirt bike.
I had that written down, because I didn't want to forget it, is the reason.
Now you can.
I never can. Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy.
I'll have two bourbons. Excellent choice.
That was really weird. Was that a Star Trek 4 callback where she orders like a pepperoni pizza and two beers and the guy says, great choice. Like,
I don't. I don't know. It's that phone numbers are all 555.
Right.
Beer is always right. A beer. It's like that.
If you really like bourbon, you just order bourbon, right?
That's
what you do.
Yeah, just be a bourbon brand bourbon.
Straight bourbon, so please.
Well, there's definitely, and I kind of like it. I think it fits that time period maybe a bit. Mm-hmm. She's just ordering a well bourbon and also fits her haircut.
Yes. I wouldn't have even noticed it, except that he says excellent choice.
And I'm like, I completely noticed it.
He calls her by name, too.
I know it's both those things.
I always notice it. I wouldn't have cracked a joke about it. It's just another one of the TV doing TV business things. But the fact that he gets excited about the genericness of the order.
Oh, man. I finally get to crack this bottle of bourbon that I've never opened. It reminds me of
Nobody
when I was...
Nobody bourbon.
When I was a senior in college and I went out to buy, like, you know, my first bottle of scotch or something. And I remember going to the liquor store and looking at the various bottles. And on the bottom, I swear to God, it looked like there was just like an Ocean Spray juice bottle. It looked like that with a white label and a red block text on it that just said scotch.
Sure,
and to this day, it seared in my memory. And I think to myself, I don't know what that was, but it's probably good I didn't buy it.
Generic
it was cheap,
scotch.
Though. It was cheap. All right, we are here to discuss Loki Season 2, Episode 5, entitled Science/Fiction. John Moltz is going to do a recap.
Yeah, so Loki is now he's in the now empty TVA, and he's time-slipping again. He time-slips and then sees himself across the room, and then the TVA starts to spaghettify. We cut to Alcatraz. Where Casey in 1962, where Casey is escaping with some cohorts. Loki appears on the beach as they're trying to get into a boat to get away, but Casey doesn't know him. Then he time slips again and he's at the McDonald's, and then he time slips again. He's at a jet ski store. Then he's back.
I think
the
they
TVA.
Sell more than jet skis, John.
It's true. Then we see B-15, who is a doctor in her real life. Loki time slips right in front of her, which is quite something for her to see. Finally, we see Mobius on a jet ski, and although it's a stationary one. He's a salesman and maybe not a very good one. Loki appears there again, and he tries to tell Mobius about the TVA. He doesn't know him either. Then Loki disappears. We cut to OB, who is trying to buy his own science fiction books at a bookstore, but, well,
look,
sadly, no one buys science fiction books.
I don't appreciate this.
He lives in a place that looks remarkably like his workshop at the TVA. Loki appears, and OB is very willing to listen and picks up on things quickly. He's also apparently a physicist. He tells Loki he has to learn.
He's like, I had to get a PhD.
Right.
He wasn't cutting into his
own. Too real, people.
Gonna get a real job, slave away at this PhD gig. He tells Loki that he has to learn how to control the time slipping, but Loki can't do it. And then OB says, with science, it's all what and how. With fiction, it's why. OB suggests that they have to get everyone together to get their temporal auras and use them like coordinates to get back to the TVA. Loki gives him a TVA guidebook, and then he time slips to Mobius's house. Mobius is apparently not the best dad either. Mobius tries to sell him his used jet skis.
Did you see the sheets hanging out of the kid's window?
Oh, no. I did not see the sheets hanging out of his window.
Like,
yeah.
There's a sheet rope hanging on the kid's window, which is just a hilarious bit of set dressing.
I wrote down who gave you the matches. I stole them.
Yeah, and there's an action figure which looks very much like a Minuteman
yeah.
That has been burned. Anyway, so Loki is still trying to tell Mobius who he is in the TVA. Mobius is about to hit him with a wrench when OB steps through a time portal. That kind of convinces Mobius. They go and get B-15 and Casey, and they go back to OB's place. Now Loki has to go get Sylvie. As she is about to get into her truck, her dinner dissolves, and then Loki appears. She remembers him, and then she goes and buys him a bourbon. She doesn't want to help him. She just wants to have a life, and he calls her selfish. She starts grilling him on what it is that he really wants, and he finally admits that he wants his friends back. She basically tells him to get a life and then leaves. Meanwhile, Casey kind of wants to steal the temp pad. Mobius is trying to sell B-15 a jet ski. Loki comes back and just tells them all to go home. It's over. Sylvie goes to a record shop where the guy behind the counter gives her a record to try. While she's listening to it, the whole timeline begins to dissolve.
What a fantastic scene. I love
such a great scene.
Mm-hmm. This whole scene was amazing. I'm like, man.
Yeah,
what kind of a show are we watching that we get to do right. this? It's so cool.
She opens a portal and gets out, heading to OB's place. Loki is telling the rest of them, telling them to go back to their lives and forget the TVA when she appears and tells them the branches are dying. They're about to read all the auras when they realize the temp pad is gone. He cues Casey, but Casey starts dissolving. The rest of them start dissolving. OB says it was a fiction problem. And then finally, Sylvie dissolves, leaving Loki standing there. And he is clawing at the strands of time when Sylvie, he time slips back to just when Sylvie arrived. And Loki says it's not about what, how, or why, it's about who. And he time slips back to the TVA right before Victor Timely goes into the vault.
Power of Love starts playing, and
that would have been pretty funny.
I don't want to like get too far ahead of myself in the rating, the ritual, but I really
do. You want us to just give you points ahead. Now? Why don't we just give you points?
No, I just want to say,
John, remember when Dan said something that turned out to be true, right? Yeah.
I mean, I was just going to say I really love this episode.
Okay.
That's what you get for being honest.
Although I do think I called the band getting back together.
Oh, God damn it. Yes.
The Velvet Underground Loaded is the album.
Yeah, great album.
Yeah.
I love that whole scene because it's just cool. Like, Sylvie having relationships with other people that are outside of, like, our little gang is really cool because...
Yeah. And her life is so mundane.
Yeah. Really.
Right. Which is what she wants.
Normal.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's all she wanted. That's all she ever wanted.
But she's like pals with the guy at the record shop who's just like, yeah, go hang out here. Listen to this. You'll dig it. It's so great. Like,
she tries to save her too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I liked.
Right. Yeah. And she tries to see him. She tries to grab his hand.
Yeah. That is a great looking scene. I mean, it's poignant. I think effectively so.
Yeah. I'm watching that and like, this is a superhero movie or a show with like Velvet Underground, and like Lou Reed going on. It's totally working. It doesn't seem contrived at all. It's a beautiful shot. Like when the camera comes down on and she's sitting on the couch and you see the whole story.
I mean, the effect of time is spaghettifying.
Yeah.
Is not at all what you would think, and it is not at all a traditional sort of MCU effect either, right?
It looks great. It really does.
I feel like they do all the, they have things that they repeat. There's the which I kind of hate is the nanotechnology suits that cover their faces stuff like that. Yeah. I feel like they took something away when they did that.
Me too.
I just prefer the actual physical suits seemed so much more grounded in reality, I guess.
Tony putting on his suitcase suit in Iron Man 2 is one of the coolest things. It's so great.
I love that so much.
It's this big clunky case.
Yeah, it's awesome. Right.
I think the thing that occurred to me when watching it all dissolve is, and this feels very deliberate, is they wanted something that did not look like Infinity War, right? They wanted something that looked like the people dissolving without turning to dust. And I feel like they worked very hard to be like, let's envision a totally different way to do that, because otherwise that's all people will be thinking about. And I think it worked. They nailed it. Like, this, it's very unsettling, in a different sort of way, because it has this almost organic aspect to it. Like the scene at the very beginning where he's in the TVA and all the consoles start unraveling, almost like they're sprouting like growth.
Electrical wires. Almost.
Yeah, it's weird and unsettling, I think, and but effective for sure.
Yeah. They use that same effect in Quantumania. One of the Scots gets all spaghettified.
Yeah, yeah, all the different, Lang, Scott Lang's.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Which is a good scene. I think that's a pretty well-done scene in that movie.
It is, yeah. It's our pal, Todd.
Oh. He handcrafted each strand.
He did that himself.
That's it. Every pixel on that is exactly him. No, that's not what I'm saying, but I believe he was the supervisor on that shot or something. I don't want to overcredit him, but I'm pretty sure.
I wanted to call out a handful of things in this episode that I think are particularly great. The scene where Loki appears in front of the Tube Man and it's doing the same pose to him. Amazing. Yeah. The scene later where Obi tells him to try time slipping and there's a little montage of Tom Hiddleston doing all the different contortions. Excellent.
Yeah. Just without the special deal. Probably exactly the same thing without the special effects.
Yeah.
His little bit of comedic business work at the end, which I thought was really good. I did not see his bourbon disappear, but when he goes for it and it's like, it's not there.
Yeah.
And he's just like, what the hell? There's lots of good little understated Tom Hiddleston bits in this episode, I think. Owen Wilson's somehow, what I love about these characters in this is that they are somehow the same people intrinsically, even though they have totally different memories. Like Mobius Don, I guess, is basically the bit where he's like, Mobius, it's a pretty cool name, you know, like,
yeah.
Like that's a great bit. Or Mobius is my space name.
Yeah.
He's just trying to sell people on the jet ski and his enthusiasm for it. Like, I love that he's playing the same notes in a different context. Like, it really works.
B-15. Wow. Just terrific performance. I really, really like that actor. She's really got it. Like, B-15 as B-15, pretty kind of a hard ass, you know, at least the first season. What a lovely, fun, charming doctor. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, this makes a lot of sense. This really, I see it now. You know, like, I get where you're coming from. And, man.
Yeah.
I just really enjoy watching her on screen, and they've made her a real awesome character with not a lot of lines, but enough to, like, if they did an episode that was just her going about and doing stuff, I would be into it. You know what I mean? Like, you can't do that with every character. I think Casey would have a harder time, to be honest.
No, six episode season.
Great.
I was going to say the MVP, I think, though, is Kehui Kwan. Obi's whole performance in all of this is great. Again, he's the same character, just in a totally different context. I love all the bits where he's like, oh, I probably have a copy of the book around here for you to sign.
Yeah.
And there's like stacks of it everywhere. And then later on, he's like, oh, I found one. You know, like everything about that is great. Or like, him trying to explain this and like, the bit between him and Tom Hiddleston where he's like, you're a writer, and he says science fiction, and Tom Hiddleston just goes, I'm doomed. All of that is great. I really enjoyed his performance here. He has added a lot to this season, and he's got some real MVP stuff happening.
I love his kind of harebrained and kind of understandable move of just stuffing his books into a bookstore's shelves. Like,
have you tried that, Dan?
They frown on it, as they do here.
Yeah, it's weird because, like,
yeah.
I mean, he definitely can't do that. It obviously doesn't make any sense. He
didn't answer the question.
It's frowned upon.
Yeah, I'm not going to go further than that. You know what you need to know.
That sounds good.
I
love it. Like, it's not like he can get any money. He just wants people to read his books, which is a very understandable and like kind of an awesome.
And this adds another layer to the Ouroboros. You know, he's giving him the TVA book again. So he's not only does he get, you know, does Victor Timely get ideas from him, and he gets ideas from Victor Timely, he also gets ideas from his own work.
But that's kind of like a classic argument against time travel, right? Is like, we know it doesn't exist because we would have it immediately.
Yeah.
You know, it feels like one of those things that, like, it's going to ripple through time. Well,
unless we're the first ones through the loop.
No, because then the second loop, you would just, you would take your TARDIS back, right?
It just reminds me of the old, you know,
let's not
do we want? Time travel. When do we want it? Irrelevant.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Man, I don't even know where to start with this episode, other than at the top, which is what Dan tried to do. Great app. What did we learn, though? I guess we learned their backstories of the characters, who they're from, or who they are, and where they're from. I feel like the toast is buttered a little much in that Loki loves Sylvie, and therefore... magic, I guess. I don't really know.
That's the way he learns how to time slip.
Yeah. On the other hand, it does kind of make sense in that, like, you know, when the people you really care for are on the line, then you manage to overcome
fundamentally, trials. I think this episode is a character-driven episode in which it's about Loki coming to terms with what's important to him, which is his friends, which is not a thing that he previously has ever really had, right? Like, that character does not have a lot of friends. And him realizing that, I think, is about the development of, like, you know, he's there not just to save the world, because there's a point where he thinks maybe the world's just fine. Like, if there's a weak point in this episode, it's that there is kind of, for me, the dual themes going back and forth where it's like him coming to grips with, maybe I just need to let this go. But of course, there is also a real threat to everybody. And so Sylvie eventually has to, like, lose the argument, quote unquote, because this other bad external thing is happening.
Yeah, I love that discussion in the bar where basically she's why are you doing it? Why are you doing it? Why are you doing it? And so I just, who am I without my friends? And it's like, okay, well, that's not... that's a selfish reason. That's not the altruistic reason that you're trying to tell yourself. So maybe go away and think about that. Great. Loved it. Then we get the scene in the record shop. Amazing scene. But the plot conspires to unravel her argument, like, quite literally, right? Like, it's like, okay, you made an awesome argument, but now guess what? Because magic... well, now we need you to team up and actually go and help this, see this through.
Yeah, so I mean, set up by the previous episode, so I'm not totally, it doesn't totally bug me, but it does.
It doesn't tarnish it for me at all, especially because it was so beautiful. Like, I love that scene, but you're right in that it's like, she won that argument fair and square, and it is about his friends.
Yeah.
I kind of wish he had to sit with that for, like, longer than...
yeah,
it took him to take a shot.
It is tricky because I think they want to justify it with Mobius's conversation from the previous week about how this is the only life he's known and he's very happy with it. And, like, I mean, in the honestly, is he should be able to have the option of those two lives, but I don't think that really is a possibility given the way that this universe works, right? He has no knowledge of his other lives in either case.
Right. Do we think Loki's going to be the one that wipes their minds?
That's an interesting idea. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I mean...
well, do they... I mean, I'm not sure they need to have their minds wiped at this point.
Well, yeah, I have the question a feeling is, they're starting this TVA. Like, they are going to...
yeah, but are they starting it? I mean, well,
yeah.
Is it the snake biting its own tail, or are they starting fresh? I mean, it seems like maybe they would go, you know, the way this show operates, they would go into it thinking that they were restarting it, and then it turns out they're not really restarting it. They're just starting the way it was started in the beginning. But
yeah, that's kind of my...
well, except there's no Kang, unless we don't know what happens to Victor. We don't know. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff to wrap up in one episode, I think, but it seems well poised to do that. It feels this season feels to me very well paced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too.
Like, I have not felt like there was an episode, you know, I know we had a little bit in the World's Fair episode, but there's a lot of back and forth and stuff like that, but it didn't feel to me like it was filler. Yeah. Yes, we're just curmudgeons. Like, but it didn't feel like there are seasons of shows where you can watch an episode that's like in an ongoing plot and feel like, okay, they just needed to pad this a little bit.
There are whole shows that are filler, but just the entire.
That too.
All of it.
But I feel like overall, all these episodes have worked pretty well together to move stuff forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like last season we complained a little bit about the planet episode seeming like it was not
spinning its wheels a bit.
Pacing, yeah, exactly. I think we said something slightly similar about the third episode, but it didn't seem like it's anywhere close to what it was.
This season to me has been better than the last one. I think like many terrific shows. The first season ends up looking kind of not great in retrospect, in that they were finding their footing. And I really did like the first season, but I think the second season is superior for sure.
I'm kind of coming down on that side too, I think. To see how it ends.
This, again, not to knock the first season's great. Yeah, I just think this one's more confidence in the execution, I guess.
They're both better than Secret Invasion.
Well, I mean, low bar, John.
Maybe we should throw Secret Invasion out along with Andor. You know what I mean?
Outliers. Yeah. Kill the outliers.
I'm mostly using it just as a punchline.
That's all it's good for. Really. Yeah.
Punchline / punching bag.
I'm not saying, oh boy, Marvel gets, you know, finally has it right because they've topped Secret Invasion.
Yeah, yeah. Mulch with his one big purple arm. Just smashing. That's how you nail it.
Oh, man. Oh, thank you for that. I really need to remember all of that. I'm really curious to know whether they intend to make another season of this. I'm honestly, like, at this point, I feel like it could kind of go either way. And I would honestly, you know, on the one hand, I would be sad if we didn't get to spend more time with these characters. But on the other hand, if they nail the ending, I am like, yeah, walk away. Right. Like, it's rare. Certainly feels to me rare, the Marvel show and show in general, that really is like, hey, we did two great seasons and we are done. And like, we are sitting on our laurels.
Yeah. I'm still concerned that they are going to do too much setup for other things at the end of this season. And, I would rather have them end the show on, you know, with an ending that is for the show rather than like tune into Kang Dynasty.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if
King Dynasty weeknights at 7.
Yeah, right.
If next week we get, I don't know, some sort of massive tee off event for Kang, and then that's the end of the show because it has served its purpose in terms of launching Kang. Yeah. It will be a disservice to all of the great characters that they've got because it's. Yeah. But the heart of the show is like Loki learning to love himself through Sylvie. Basically, I just pulled that off the top of my head, and I'm not entirely sure of that thesis, but that's roughly that.
And Mobius and finding friends and finding a life that, you know, that is sufficiently outside. I mean, it's basically the story of a found family as opposed to the dysfunctional family that he grew up in.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, he had a very dysfunctional family. He was not told that he was adopted. His older brother is kind of a jerk sometimes, but also hard to live up to because everybody loves him and nobody likes him.
He's a little insufferable,
this misanthrope. Yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of things, you know. But then both my mom gets killed, my father dies. all kinds of things going on there. So there's a lot of drama, and he's found people that kind of
accept him
and are a little bit, you know, I mean, Sylvie obviously is him. So she's, you know, exactly the same, pretty much. Well, not exactly, but she's very much the same. The other people who worked at the TVA also have like a history of doing things that were not great. right? I mean, they didn't realize necessarily what they were doing, but they were pruning timelines and killing trillions of people. So,
yeah. No, I mean, I think to your point about setting up the future, I think this is one of the things, and we'll talk about this a little bit in Superhero Sweep too, that is definitely a struggle with Marvel, because I would argue that like a lot of season one, even though parts of it felt like setting stuff up, it's not like it was they're trying to walk this line of like, we want to interconnect our stuff and we want to set stuff up, but we also don't want you to feel like you have to have seen everything, because you could have gone into any of the things after that without having seen Loki and it would make no difference, right? You could watch Quantumania. It doesn't matter if you've seen Loki or not. Like, yeah. It might change the way you view certain things, but it's not like you need to have seen it to understand who those characters are, because it doesn't really play a direct effect. All the multiversal stuff that they did is also isolated and like siloed in a way, right? Like, you know, doing No Way Home and Multiverse of Madness and Loki all within like a period of like a year, year and a half, but none of them directly like are in conversation with the other. It's just,
yeah.
At most, it's like a hat tip. So that is, and I think that's honestly the worst of, but rather than trying to thread that needle and get both of these things, I kind of feel like they accomplish neither, which is they just make everything feel a little bit like, oh, it's setting up to some other thing that doesn't really pay it off. And so in some ways it'd be better off if you just like let it be its own thing off in its own silo entirely without worrying about what else it's trying to set up.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they've learned that lesson or not.
I don't know either. Or, you know, or if they had learned that lesson by, you know, a year ago or whenever.
Right. Yeah. Whenever they finish this.
Plotted out.
The thing is, or at least what my sort of take on this conversation that we're having is that we are so happy with this show that all we can really say is that we're worried that they're going to screw up the ending somehow. Which is like, you know, I don't know if facts and evidence seem to say that they've got it. They're going to do something pretty good. Yeah. What is next week, right? Like, so we got the gang back together. We've determined that the who is the question sort of thing that helps him control his powers. And he jumped back into the TVA when? Right before Timely went out?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I went back and looked at the previous episode, okay. and he's standing next to OB at the top of that staircase after Timely had just walked down that staircase to go out into the vault.
Yeah. But how do you change, right? Like, what has he learned in that?
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah,
I
mean, that it can change
things. There's stuff in the mid-season trailer that, you know, there's stuff in the mid-season trailer. It doesn't really tell you what he has learned, but it kind of tells you some of what happens next.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting because we've passed the point of like, we already addressed last week the part when he jumped to the future.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a part? I don't think there's anything sort of outstanding from like dangling plot threads in terms of stuff that we know happens or whatever that we haven't had resolved at this point. Although we don't know if things like Ravonna, like, is she dead? I mean, it seems like, but we don't know how far, if stuff changes or he can jump back further, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
she might not show up
there and be like, this isn't far enough, and then go like, all right, I'm gonna go back, like, you know, another day or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could be. Yeah. So all of that stuff could get undone. Some of it could get undone. It's really anybody's guess at this
point.
I think
my guess is
we shattered, about a future season.
Yeah, we shattered Timely across all time and space somehow, becoming Kangs.
Mm. Oh, we make the Kangs.
We make
the Kangs we want to see in the world.
Yeah, that's true, really.
That's my guess.
That's a good guess.
That's a pretty good guess.
What I like is that there is nobody to punch. There is no bad guy to fight.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no
thumbs up to
Malcolm Merlin to try to stab you. It's no. I don't know why I picked on him. That was great. Darkness on the Edge of Town. Like, what a terrific episode. Great song. Great episode of Arrow. But you know what I mean? There's no big bash em up coming.
I think that's the biggest testament to this show is proving that it's very, you know, not very easy. That's the wrong word. But like, you can depart from the formula and still make a very successful, arguably one of their most successful stories.
Yeah.
And that's something you need to take away from that. So that's something you need to be looking at and saying, oh, there are other stories to tell other than let's bash a couple action figures together.
I think WandaVision did that right up until the end. Pretty where well. They kind of, I'm sure somebody put in a note that's like, we need some flying witches and a fight. And say, okay, I guess so. She-Hulk.
But she solved that. I mean, yeah, it is a fight, but she solves it with a trick. You know, like it's something that she has learned throughout the course of the... So it's not just like...
Albeit something
it's not just by running faster.
Right. Yeah, it leads into its own problematic problems. But
yes, sure. But like, they did set up a big bash-em-up. She-Hulk managed to sidestep it, which I thought was cute, but it was you obviously can only do that trick once, right? Like,
right? Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. I think that is an interesting, and the reception to that has varied, but I think they did a good job with it. That was consistent to the story they were trying to tell.
Yeah, that show has problems, but I liked it generally, and I sort of admire their take on things. Like they were doing a different show, so.
Yeah, agreed. So I mean, that if anything to take away from Loki, it's that, which is you can tell a different type of story. You just need to have people who are interested in that story and strongly want to tell that story. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Speaking of which, I mean, I wanted to pull in one letter, actually. We did get it was a post on Mastodon, but I wanted to mention it because we just mentioned this, and I think... they've got our number, which is Phil, who wrote, I think this is the event that created Kang. He's just been scattered across all time and universes always. So Phil nails exactly what we were just saying, which is...
I swear I didn't steal that from you, Phil. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. but full credit there.
So Phil gets the point, what you're saying?
Phil gets the point. Okay. John, write it down.
okay. I mean, I'm not going to vote. Yeah.
Do we have anything else to say, or should we go into the ritual?
I think let's go into the ritual, because
sure,
we actually have a pretty chunky piece of sweep to get to. And I'm going to go chunky first, sweep. Because if we just keep talking about this, all we're going to do is gush about this episode, I think. It's is it Kang or Clan? It's a Kang, baby. It's great. It's a very solid biff.
Who is Clang?
I don't know. Clang or Clunk?
It's Kang's good twin.
Is it a Kanger or a Clunker?
He's a little goofy. Hi, I'm Clang. Oh, God.
Work with me here. I'm trying to refine our already well-honed rating system. Sure. It's a terrific episode. It's just great TV. Honestly, when she's sitting in that record store listening to that record, that shot, that whole thing was beautiful. It was amazing. If anything... I like that scene so much that like the rest of the episode felt a little let down because it wasn't quite as good. But that's a dumb thing. It's just dumb. It's like I just like that so much. And there was just the weird friendliness of it, like the warmth of it. It was just cool. I liked it a lot. I like all of her characters. I like that Eugene Cordero was not doing Rutherford this week. That was fun.
Yeah.
Still a couple lines.
He was very different, sounded like him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yep.
I love the just randomness of breaking out of Alcatraz. To me, it was so unexpected and so delightful. I don't know. It's just a random bit. Like you can picture the writers being in the writing room being like, I don't know, what if he's like breaking out of prison or something?
Yeah, it's perfect. Yeah. I like that he's like, can you go into a prison, into a vault, into a bank vault? Snoopy's just looking at him like, dude. everything's great. I liked it a lot. Very, very strong biff. I don't know. I could just gush about every scene, so I'll let one of you guys pick up the ball.
Does Mobius's neighborhood look weird to you?
Yeah, it does, because it's like it's got a psych. It's not a psych. It's a high-tech thing. But like the way it shot his thing, his house, is like... clearly background material. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I just don't. There's something weird about it, and I can't quite figure out what it is.
Suburbia,
but also just like the arrangement of the neighborhood seems like not real for some reason.
It's a little weird.
It's okay. It's fine. Yeah. You know, it's not a big deal, but it's just like, it just struck me the first time I watched it and I was, and it struck me the second time I watched it too. And I was just like, why is that weird?
Feels off. Definitely feels off.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, is it my go? Yeah. All right, go ahead. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a definite biff. I mean, I was practically giddy watching parts of this episode, just at how much I was enjoying it and how pleased I've been throughout this season to just enjoy episode after episode. And oh my God, is there a Hamburglar in there? Is a Hamburglar. Oh, it's not a person, but it's just a cardboard cutout, but there's a Hamburglar.
I love that McDonald's with the curved windows, like in that little.
That was definitely a thing. I mean, I wonder if they built that or if that's like one that's still out there someplace. The art direction, of course, continues to be absolutely other than Mobius's neighborhood, is fantastic. Also, the camera work is really good in this. There's a lot of shots where they slowly pull in, and you know, like, and people will be having a conversation and they'll pull in towards the door, and then Loki steps through a time portal right there. And of course, all the camera work in the record shop, when everything is dissolving, and even before things are dissolving, is done super well. There's an overhead shot of Sylvie sitting on the couch listening to the music that pans down, and it's so good.
It's beautiful. It's just great work. Yeah,
and it's a funny show as well. There are not like super laugh out loud, but there's definitely things that make you laugh and things that make you chuckle. It's really hitting on all thrusters for me, I'm enjoying it, and I'm kind of sad that next week will be the last episode of the season.
yeah and Hiddleston, to your point, is just so likable in a in a quiet way, you know what I mean? It's not like he's cracking jokes or like, hey buddy.
I mean, there are so many, like in this episode in particular, I think I noticed and it's a thing, obviously, there would be, we've talked about it before, and lots of people talked about it, where, you know, he throws his hair back. I noticed it a lot in this episode, and I just think it could be the kind of thing that would be annoying, you know? I mean, it's like, oh, he's always doing that. Why does he always do that? Like, you know, like a superhero landing kind of thing. But I think it's, in this show, I think it works super well, and just becomes like, that's his thing. And then they make fun of it with the air dancer. It's just, it's perfect.
One thing, sorry, Dan, before you go, because I forgot to say one of my favorite things about this app. Any good show worth its salt has great corridors. The Enterprise always has great corridors. DS9 has some great corridors. This show has got like top tier corridors. I love how tight they are. Like, this is just all weird filing cabinets on the side. So great. When he's just wandering through the TVA when nobody's around. Looks beautiful, looks great, feels claustrophobic and expansive at the same time. Great, great work.
Yeah.
Go for it, Dan.
Yeah, this is a real bit for me. I think it might have been my favorite episode of the season. I don't know. There's something about it manages to hit all its beats in kind of a perfect rhythm for me, where there's scenes that you like, you pick up on it as a watcher sometimes, like right before the thing is going to happen, and yet you're like, oh yeah, like the scene where Obi's like, well, maybe I could build something if I had, you know, instructions or something, and you're like, he's got the manual, like, you know, just being able to have that split second ahead of like the screen where you're like, oh yeah, that
it's,
makes
that,
perfect
it's
sense
that adventure game
thing.
When you realize that you've got the thing in your inventory.
I've got the inventory. yeah it's perfect. Like, I enjoyed that it hits just the right comedic notes, as we talked about. I think Tom Hiddleston is great. This Loki is so different from the scenery chewing Loki of the movies that he's done such a great job of evolving this character, not just once, but like a couple times, that I think there's just, it's a real testament to his work here. And we've talked in the past about how much he is into this character and how much he has really taken sort of the, you know, life of this character and made it his study. Like, you know, he is a great actor, I think, and he is approaching this role, you know, with all the seriousness that one would, you know, do Hamlet as he has talked about in the past, right? Like, and I appreciate that. Like,
yeah.
You want to see somebody show up to work and be
he's
like,
not superheroing it, you know? Like, he's not like, oh, it's a fun thing that I'm doing for, you know, like, I mean, he's not phoning this in any, and I don't think, I mean, there's nobody that I can think of in the MCU particularly who's phoning it in, really. I mean, I'm not like trying to point a finger at somebody. I just think that he is like neck deep in this character.
Yeah, like more than a decade, right, that he's been spending embodying this character. And I think it shows that he has put a lot of care and love into it. And and it's a character with a lot of depth and a lot of potential for doing all sorts of things.
Yeah.
And that to me is a testament to his work, especially. But overall, I think this episode looks fantastic. Kehui Kwan as OB is just really doing excellent work here. I love his whole bit about being a dejected science fiction author. In other cases, it could have felt like punching down, but you know, it's about writers and it's written by writers writing science fiction. So it has that, like,
oh yeah,
it is loving in the way that it treats him, even if he is a bit of a sad sack.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it is, very.
He's also a PhD.
Exactly.
At Caltech.
Anytime they're mocking writers, I'm like, that's just a loving.
It's the writers who are all very self-deprecating about.
Exactly,
yeah, it is. It's it's a terrible.
I mean, there's
career.
There's definitely, you know, like blogging. Blogging was a huge target for a long time, and that was very demeaning. You know,
yes.
There were lots of jokes about, like, you know, oh, bloggers. You know, I mean, this is not that.
Yeah, exactly. This is a lot of affection for this character.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know all this. I mean, my only quibble about Guy, to your point about B15, my only quibble about her here is I wish we had more time with her, because she gets that lovely scene as a doctor, and then she doesn't get to do a lot other than Mobius tries to sell you to, like, oh, you can commute if you live near a river.
Yeah, I'm not kidding. I would watch in a whole lab just her, like, next season. Let's just go back and see her life or something. She's terrific.
Well, it also makes real sense, because now we know last season Sylvie showed her life, right?
Yeah.
And if she was like, oh, I was a doctor and I help people, like, that explains why she is so enthusiastic about this, right? It's one thing for her to show Mobius.
She said she looked happy. You know?
Yeah.
That was,
It's one thing for her to show Mobius, like, Mobius is, you're a jet ski selling single dad with juvenile delinquent kids.
Yeah. He's not.
He would be like, well,
he's not a great dad. Basically,
he's not a great dad.
Like, and he kind of just leaves his kids. Like, he seems definitely concerned for them. He's like, I got to go get my kids. Like, this is too much. But at the same time,
clearly, when push comes to shove, he's definitely
clearly overwhelmed by having two kids, and his wife has left him.
Yeah,
left him or died? It was really unclear to me, because she says
gone. I felt like that fit in with his whole sort of sad sack.
Yeah,
you know, I tend
failure.
To agree.
Kind of a failure at everything. He's a failure at, you know, selling jet skis. He's a failure at being a dad, and he was also a failure at being a husband.
Yeah, yeah.
But he tries, right? Like, he wants to sell the jet skis he has because he, you know, the kids need to.
Yeah,
get there.
I mean, you can see that character getting into a bad relationship. Basically, that's like,
was this neighborhood made with AI or something?
It's just like, it's so,
there's something wrong here, and I don't know what it is.
I wasn't sure if it was intentionally a little warped and screwed up to, like, give it it's not. Edward Scissorhands is weird, and it is in how straight lined and everything is. You know,
he's got a brick driveway.
And then
but it's pavement out.
Unibrick, like, though, right?
Like,
Unibrick.
What are you, a CAPTCHA?
Yeah,
is this a driveway?
I'm finding the jet skis. Find the jet skis in this picture.
Yeah. Anyways, long story short, Biff, real Biff. I'm sad that this is next week. Like, John, is the last episode. I'm really interested to see whether there is more story to be told.
Yeah, I hope they
here.
Pull a season two, where at the very end, they announce the
season three. Yeah.
Yeah,
I feel
and
like
I think,
there's another.
You know, I think three would be
worth
great.
A story. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, if they did three, don't do any more. That's fine. But
it feels
two doesn't seem like enough to me.
Three is a pleasant number. Three is a pleasant number for storytelling. You get a beginning, a middle, and an end. And if you can tell this in 3 6 episode seasons, that feels like a pretty good complete story. So I'm rooting for them. I'm rooting for them.
Me too.
All right. Well, we'll be back next week to cover the season finale or series finale, and depending on how it shakes out. But let's take a quick hop to the letters page before we do some superhero sweep. I just wanted to say we had a Yeah, as always, you can reach us on Mastodon. We're biff@zeppelin.flights, or you can email us at biff@theincomparable.com. Jay writes, I'm guessing you've already recorded the podcast for episode 4, but just in case you hadn't, were you aware of this excellent piece of social media gamesmanship by the Loki Instagram account, where they essentially wiped out all their posts except for an access denied video by Miss Minutes after the cliffhanger last week? Yeah, that was pretty good. Thumbs up.
Yeah.
That's all I really got for letters this week. So let's hop right on over to Superhero Sweep because we got a lot there. Should we take this in reverse order? And talk about the Echo trailer, which dropped today as we record this.
Sure. I love that you're asking us about reverse or straight up order, and neither of us have, like, nobody's got a list, so sure, man.
the list is our message thread, and I'm just scrolling up.
Yeah, it's always the message thread.
The Echo trailer dropped. It's the first TVMA Disney Plus Marvel series. And it will air simultaneously on Disney Plus and Hulu, at least in the US. There is a trailer for it, which is quite intense. I saw people talking about it looking a little bit more like the Netflix Marvel shows, and I would not disagree about that from the brief bit that we saw, which includes
Vincent D'Onofrio
returning as Kingpin, beating the crap out of a hot dog vendor.
Ice cream.
Okay, sorry, I couldn't tell. He had a truck. He had a little truck on the street.
I liked,
which is, for some reason, ice cream seems even worse.
Man, that was chilling. It was. I didn't really mean to do that.
Ice cold, baby.
Yeah. Okay. Never mind.
Well, that's the show, everybody. Thanks for reading.
It immediately tells you who this character is, right? Like, he's violent, he's aggressive, he's angry, and he's protective. And whatever he saw in that little girl who was using sign language, he wanted to help her. And his version of helping and being protective is beating the tar out of poor people. Not poor people, poor innocent victims is what I mean. Yikes. Yeah, probably poor people too, because he's a richy rich, but whatever. Wow.
I mean, you know, and it is straight out of the Netflix show, basically.
Yeah. I mean,
he's just pummeling this guy in an alley.
More so than, I think, the Hawkeye portrayal of him.
Sure. Absolutely, yeah.
And parts of this seem to be...
previous to Hawkeye, though, this scene that we see him in.
Parts of it. Yes, right. That scene
seems older.
But I meant more in terms of the, like, characterization of that character.
Mm-hmm.
Because parts of this jump around a bit, because we see a clip of him at the end with a bandage over his eye, which is the implication that that part takes place after Hawkeye, at the end of which Maya shoots him in the face. There's interesting bits in this series. I'm interested in the I was reading an interview in Variety that I sent you guys. But they talk a lot about how they handled sort of the Native American culture in the show and the, going to the Choctaw Nation, which is the what in the show Maya is supposed to be a member of the Choctaw tribe. And they basically went down and, like, you know, tried to get their input and tried to get their involvement in crafting something that was authentic. Mm-hmm. Which sounded very interesting and does seem like it's playing a big part here.
Yeah, because there are even flashbacks to what looks like, you know, 100+ years ago, perhaps.
Or it could be, I mean, yeah, hard to tell.
It does.
It's hard
to
tell.
Dan, I'm scrubbing like crazy. And it really does. Yeah. I mean, it does not seem like there's anything in the background that would indicate that it was just, like, you know, sort of reenactment or something like that. It does seem like it's supposed to be. So I'll be interested to see how it turns out. I mean, there's different scenes, but there's that one that looks like it's some sort of fight ring, in the dirt. And, it looks fairly, you know, period specific. So.
Yeah.
So what you're telling me is that they didn't hire the guy they hired for Voyager? It's a weird inside joke. whatever. Like I was thinking about a 30-year-old TV show and a weird insight behind the scenes joke.
Period of time. There was a weird period of time for, you know, white people's views on Native Americans.
Man, Dances with Wolves is kind of an atrocity. It's not an atrocity. There's actual real life atrocities, but it's bad. It's no good. Yeah. Anyway,
I was going to say things I liked in this trailer. There's a bit where they're in a roller rink and it has a sign that says "Make America Skate Again."
I always get weirded out by that. I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah, I know. It's a little strange,
is a little weird, but it's,
yeah, but you can pull that joke off. You know,
yeah. There's a cooking show I watch and the guy sometimes wears like a "Make America Cook Again." And I'm never quite confident he's not a MAGA guy. But I don't know. I don't think he is. But anyway, it's an uncomfortable joke, but yeah, it is pretty funny. Skate Again.
I'm curious to know what you guys think about the, you know, sort of delving back into the TVMA side of the Marvel universe, because it's kind of, they've largely shied away from that in the MCU post like the Netflix shows.
Yeah.
Well, what do you mean post? I mean, let's just discard the Netflix show. They don't count. So this is their first attempt at it, right? And they're doing it with Echo, who is not a particularly well-known character. And they've got motivation for it in it, in Kingpin and being a mobster. I mean, obviously not that Thanos isn't violent, but like there's a groundedness to the violence of a character like the Kingpin, right?
They do mention how much this is grounded much more in the street level stuff, which is kind of what the Netflix shows aimed at. And I appreciate that because it feels in an era where so many of the MCU stuff has gone into sort of cosmic or at least globe spanning scales. It's interesting to do a story that has a much smaller scope.
Yeah, I welcome that a lot. I'm really kind of done with time travel. I know I love Loki, but like, man, multiverse stuff has got to take a break pretty soon, just in general.
You can't make everything. Well, I think that's the whole thing, right? I mean, we have long said, don't keep making the same thing.
And they don't listen to us.
And they don't listen to us. And we tend to enjoy the ones that are sort of busting out of the formula a little bit. And I think Loki, to a certain degree, does that. She-Hulk did that as well. And I think that this is, you know, hopefully something else that will break out of their formula as well.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's appropriate to do so, given the character and subject matter. I don't want Arrow to be TVMA. Like, I don't dig blood and violence.
Well,
first couple of seasons could have swung that way, and
I think would have been fine. Then it got, you know, then it got a little silly. I mean, the Arrowverse in general.
Yeah.
No.
I guess I just mean, I'm not one that goes, like, I don't need swearing on my Star Trek. I don't care. In fact, I kind of find it distracting, to be honest, and silly. But I think there is, when you've exhausted one sort of approach and they've almost exhausted their sort of Marvel formula kind of thing, I think it behooves you to take the talent that you've got and try different approaches. And I'm excited to see what they do with this one.
I'm also interested in the production of this because it's going to be dropped as a binge. It's also only 5 episodes, apparently. So shorter than even some of the shortest Marvel series we've had to date, which I'm okay with. I'm totally on board with if you can tell this story in a shorter amount of time, you should do that. That's always a good idea. And I'm intrigued to see, how that plays out. The binge thing is kind of fascinating. There have been a lot of talk and a lot of speculation about what it means, but I think from a simplest level is I think Marvel is just trying different things. Yeah. And this felt like a show where it's like, maybe this would be well served by us dropping it at once. And it'll work with the kind of like concentrated story we're trying to tell in 5 episodes. If people can just binge it all. Right.
Mm-hmm. We should mention that Matt appears.
Matt does appear.
Here. Yeah.
Although apparently
Daredevil,
it sounds
not,
like
not,
in a
no, no, buddy,
Daredevil,
Matt.
Whatever, okay.
Yeah. It sounds
we're on a first name business.
Yeah. Mr. Murdoch to you. it sounds like mainly in a flashback.
Yeah, that's possible. Right. I mean, who knows? There's all sorts of stuff going on here.
Well, it suggests in the interview I read, it suggests there is a scene that was screened for some press or whatever, where it's about, you know, Maya becoming sort of the, you know, villainous character we see her being at the beginning of Hawkeye, being in a fight with Daredevil, who is Kingpin's, you know, nemesis at that point. And he is wearing the, by all, like, hard to tell, it's a brief shot in the trailer, but it looks like he's wearing the classic suit from the Netflix era show. He's got the Billy Club and stuff too, so we'll see how that pans out. I'm curious to know how much he appears in the show. I hope this is not, like, this is one of those tricky things where it's like, I enjoy it. It plays a part that's kind of interesting. If it's a Kingpin story, it makes sense to have him in there. I hope that maybe he shows up in the first episode in a flashback or something, and that's it, and it's not like, let's wait 5 episodes. We're waiting for Daredevil to show up. It's not Daredevil's show, people.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We did go through that a little too much, I think, when we watched She-Hulk.
She-Hulk.
We knew that he was going to be in it. And it was like, you know, and they literally tipped the hat, you know, early on. And then it was like, oh, when's he coming? And then he didn't for a couple episodes. And
I think
he drops out of a tree
on their part,
which is like, all is forgiven.
From a Marvel standpoint, I kind of wish they hadn't, but I also know that if they hadn't done it, somebody would have found it and spoiled it anyway. So I understand wanting to get ahead of it.
Would have happened. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Speaking of Marvel, let's segue quickly to talking about this other story that's been making the rounds, which was in the Hollywood Reporter. I think the other day.
I don't know. We kind of don't have time.
It's also Variety.
We could do a whole hour on this.
We could do a whole hour on this.
Let's do a whole hour on it. No.
All right, hour two starting now.
Do you want to? We could do that, but I need a break. Okay, good.
I don't think so. Basically, long story short, there's a lot of things being talked about Marvel in terms of sort of conflating all these different issues, and there are a lot of different issues. This story, which we can, I guess, put a link to, I think there's some interesting parts in it. I also think that it's, you know, concocting a narrative based on a bunch of different disparate aspects, some of which I think we have heard from people who are in a position to know are not 100% accurate, because you got to always consider the source and who is talking about these things. One of the things among there, as we talked about, is like, trying to figure out what to do about Jonathan Majors because of the Kang and his domestic violence case, which is going to be on trial, I believe, later this month.
Yeah, it's like right after Loki ends or something. It's not good.
Potentially,
it is good that the wheels of justice are turning, but it's. I hate this situation. I mean, not least of which for the individuals involved in it, of course. But it just sucks to have to talk about this and think about it all the time. And I'm sure it's like, so they all, the Disney people all went away on their retreat, basically, which is, you know, an offsite where the big heads get together and they figure out what the heck they're about to do. So continue, Dan.
Yeah. So that's part of it. There's also some talk about the Marvels in terms of post-production on that and analysts' estimations of how much that's going to make. That one feels the most like kind of a tempest in a teapot to me, because it feels like that's a part where, again, people who are in a position to know have suggested that some of the things they talk about there are not the omens of disaster that they are made out to be.
Right.
There's also weird talk throughout about like bad CGI. Which I don't quite get. And again, I texted you guys the other day about this because I found it a little like bizarre. It's like a lot of people talking, there have been a lot of narrative about Quantumania having this really terrible VFX stuff. And speaking as someone who only watched it when it came to Disney+, I had no conception of this. Like, I watched that movie. It was fine.
And I saw it in the theater, but I did see it. I saw it like 2 weeks after it came out.
So. And apparently part of this is that VFX stuff is routinely now inserted after, like during release, like, which is wild to me, right? Because like, well, we all come from a film day where it's like, they make the reels, they send the reels out, and the reels are what they are. And it's like, well, now they're all just downloaded. Yeah,
downloaded,
you know,
movie.
What's hilarious is there are people out there who are spending hours and hours trying to recreate that effect for like the original Star Wars movies.
Yeah.
Trying to go back and get to the point where what you're looking at is exactly with flaws and everything, little holes in the film and cigarette marks, whatever. And it's just so funny that, you know, like we complain about like, oh, the special effects weren't quite right until 2 weeks after the movie came out. And then like everyone wants like to see a crappy version of Star Wars.
I think some of that is MODOK, who looked weird, because guess what? As I said, as we all said in chat, he's a giant head with baby legs. Like, that's he's gonna look
like,
weird.
How's he supposed to look? He's gonna look weird.
They showed his butt. Yeah. Maybe that was something. I think so. There's definitely way too much complaining about CGI stuff in general.
I think it has to do with the fact that these houses are pushed so hard.
That's definitely something.
Get everything. You know, Marvel Disney doesn't give them enough time to get these things done before the first show opens.
Yeah, well, they'll change stuff.
They're still working on it until it's, you know, they're still working on Quantumania, probably.
One of my pet peeves is not pet peeves, but it always makes me chuckle. It's mildly annoying. Is sometimes I'll watch like YouTube stuff about, I don't know, comic book movies or TV shows or something, and they're doing deep dives into like the particular colors or the particular effects used and why that means so and so is related to X, Y, Z power or something. And I have it on good authority that like half the time they don't, the VFX guys don't get much of a brief of like what it is they actually want to make, like the specifics of the effect are not written down in the script and hardwired to be like, this has to be exactly like this because we're trying to imply this kind of weird connection that like only the true fans are going to actually be able to discern. Not really. I mean, I think that the effect that we love in Loki is taken from Quantumania because it looks awesome. And that's all. I think it looks awesome. It doesn't look like dusting. It does a similar effect. The same narrative effect of a dusting.
It's almost the same thing. Right. I was thinking about that when Casey disappeared. It was like, oh, that's very much.
Well,
like,
when her McDonald's takeout disappeared off camera, like as wasn't quite off camera, but I'm like, was that a dusting?
Yeah,
that
right.
was weird. Anyway, I don't really understand why that went away, but who cares? It seemed arbitrary.
Well, narrative
effect.
Sure.
That's actually a thing all McDonald's meals do. You leave them out long enough, they get unraveled.
A lot of the beef stays with them.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's just not true.
It'll
sit there in a steady state for years.
Other little tidbits from this piece. Blade has continued to have some production problems. There have been a couple different directors, several writers. It continues to be in development. It's slated for 2025 now.
Let's not forget these guys are still not settled with the Screen Actors Guild. So
That too, and also as we mentioned, the VFX people, they've now unionized, or at least started to talk about unionization.
Yeah, the in-house Disney VFX people. So a lot of people that are on set have unionized now, and a couple of external houses have started to unionize too. I don't know the details, so I don't want to claim more than that, but it seems to me to be a good trend in terms of protecting these people's livelihoods, frankly, and
it's worth mentioning. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
100%. I think what is the eyebrow raising part about this story for me is mostly, look, this is a huge company that's become probably the biggest like movie phenomenon of our lifetimes, and when you get to that size, you're going to start having problems because it's unwieldy and nothing else has ever been at this level before in terms of the way they're trying to make movies, the way they are putting these things together, having this giant shared universe. It's unprecedented. And I think some of this is like a law of large numbers sort of situation where it's like sooner or later they were going to run into a problem like they did with Jonathan Majors, right? Sooner or later, you're going to cast somebody who has a real serious problem, and that is going to reflect badly at you, or you're going to be working people so hard in VFX that these things don't pan out. Whether this is a cohesive narrative that can be pointed to, like, okay, you've got a big problem there, I don't think that's necessarily the case. Yeah. I think for sure they have a lot of small problems. I don't think it necessarily means they're existentially doomed, but that they probably need to take a hard look at the way they're doing things and change something about the way their business is operating, which by all accounts they seem to be doing because they have pulled back a bit on their schedule for releases and potentially winnowed down. We've heard, you know, rumor anyways that some series will not go into development or make it push back. I think there's going to be some changes for sure. The question at the end of the day is whether or not they can still put out a product that people are interested in.
Yeah, I think, I mean, so the three of us obviously get, you guys write about tech all the time. And in like a lot of ways, Apple has a bunch of, similar to what you're saying, a bunch of small problems that does not necessarily equate to like one giant massive problem that's kind of ding them. But at any one time, there's like five reasons why Apple is screwing up. Right now, it's no USB mice. USB-C mice.
That's what did them in.
According to some.
What a sad way for them to die.
It's like, it's not like you're wrong, and it is clearly a screw-up of some description, but it's like, it's not the end of the world, and I think Marvel's, Disney's kind of in the same boat. I know they've had some kind of trouble maybe getting the returns on investment for the Disney Plus stuff that they hope to have, but I think it makes sense to take a step back and reevaluate what it is you're trying to make, and maybe dial things back a little bit. But ultimately, I don't think that that's a sign that you're tanking.
Slow down a little bit. That makes sense. Yeah. But it's not like they haven't made some good stuff in the past, and it's not like it's not salvageable. I mean, it's not in a burn the whole thing down state.
Yeah, and don't forget,
even with Secret Invasion.
Yeah, well, that one did suck. But don't forget that a lot of the things we're talking about are announced, which I think is maybe a mistake, but they're not out yet. They don't need to come out. Yeah. They can scrap them. It's not a thing until it's made a thing and then released to the public. So,
or rework them, or
there's plenty of time, or you can shelve it. Lots of stuff. You can be like, you know what, team, that was great, great exercise. Maybe we're going to go away and come up with something else. Like, obviously, you pay people out, but I don't think it's quite as cataclysmic as people want to paint it out to be, because it is more fun to have a cataclysmic news story around this stuff.
Sure. Yeah. Gets clicks. Yeah. For sure.
One of the things that you didn't mention is that there's rumors that they were thinking of driving if Ollie doesn't kidnap it on the way there, driving a bank truck up to RDJ and like trying to get him back to be Iron Man, the original Avengers together.
Yeah, that was another tidbit that which I felt was a. I don't think that. This is me totally reading between the lines. That to me does not feel like a Kevin Feige idea. That feels like an idea foisted upon him. Just get the original people back. Pay them whatever they want.
Right. Do what we were doing before. Yeah.
That's not a sustainable fix for this.
No. I mean, I wouldn't completely write off the idea that, you know, because you're doing multiverse stuff, I guess have them come back and, you know, like pop in for a minute, but that's not the problem.
Yeah.
The problem is the stories you're telling aren't that great, aren't as good as they used to be. So maybe work on that part.
Or in some cases, I would argue that it's not that the stories you're telling aren't as great. It's to me, to a certain degree, it's almost like a low hanging fruit problem. It's like you did this and we didn't really have the saturation that we have now. And so you told these stories and they were like entertaining because we hadn't seen that before. And it's not to say they're bad. It's just like it scratched an itch. And it's like, That itch has been thoroughly scratched now. You have to work a little harder, right?
I'm There's a little more work bleeding with that itch. Yeah. We just stop doing that.
It's now a scab.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's my feeling on it is like, it turns out it's hard work if you want to keep sustaining this and keep topping yourself in a way that isn't going to end up being just totally ridiculous.
Yeah. One of the things that occurred to me after reading this article was sort of the first arc between Iron Man and Endgame. Tony Stark's effectively the central character of that, right? Like he kind of kicks the whole thing off. He goes kind of like bad, I guess, in Civil War. And ultimately it's his death that ends that little arc. We have no analog for that in whatever phase we're in now. Who are we following on this grand journey through this story? Nobody?
Yeah.
You know, like Age of Ultron gets kicked off because Tony got scared of Loki's invasion. There's a narrative going through there, a through line with Tony Stark that I think makes sense, and we just don't have anything like that for whatever story we've got now. Maybe Loki, except...
Yeah, he's really siloed off in his own.
Yeah, he's not. I mean, it seems like this story, I mean, and to a certain degree, this is why it works, honestly.
Right.
But it's its own thing. It's not, I mean, it does tie into the other stuff, but it's not, it doesn't feel like he's just going to appear in a movie anytime soon.
Yeah, I think part of that is also, I totally agree with you, Guy. Like, if you said, like, who are our main protagonists?
Right.
In this phase of the MCU, can you name someone? Like, I think my top ones would be like, I mean, I would certainly like to see a lot more Kamala Khan. which we are going to in the next imminently. But who are the characters that are the recurring characters that we keep coming back to who are leading the charge? And part of that is also if you are building up this big threat, you need to have it feel like there's some impact on those characters to a certain degree.
Yeah.
Like you need to feel like they have something they're striving against.
Yeah.
And that has yet to be, there's in some ways the proliferation of characters all over the place. Right. I mean, as varied as Shang-Chi and the Eternals and all this, like it's kind of all over the place. Yeah. I think they just have a much less cohesive idea in this than they did before.
Maybe Strange.
Yeah, except that movie was really not the best. But
I know. But
I like that character just fine.
Movie too, and he's like multiversing things up. So you
he's
know.
Better. In,
but
yeah. Yeah,
well, I don't see an arc. He's not arcing anything. He's just
no. So, right,
I agree.
Yeah. Well, there's I don't know. Ew. There might be, but it doesn't. It's not.
I have yet to see it. Basically,
don't think anybody cares that much.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, we could go on about that, and I'm sure we'll talk about it more.
Probably next week right after now, we get some letters, we'll end up digging into it again. So.
But we will be back next week to talk about the finale of Loki Season 2. And after that, I guess we're off until Echo.
No, there's a movie coming out.
Well,
there is a movie coming out. I'm hoping to get to see it in the movie theater.
Marvels. That's fine.
But
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I will get to it or not in the movie theater, but
sure
I would like
when
to.
I will either,
but, yeah. But it's high. I'm really looking forward to it because that has several characters I really enjoy, and I hope it's good. But yeah, we'll hopefully find some time to do that, and hopefully we have not yet figured out what we're doing for Echo since it drops all in one. That's going to be an interesting.
Oh, true.
Well, do you want my vote? Episode by episode, week for week. That way, we get 5 weeks instead.
There is that argument.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't know. We'll figure it out. All right. Well, let's wrap up this week's episode. I would, of course, like to thank my co-host, as always, for being here. John Maltz, always a pleasure.
I'm just going to say, I want everybody to know that if you want a Piranha Power Sports t-shirt, go to cottonbureau.com and search on BiffCast. And you can get hooked.
It's a good looking t-shirt. Yeah.
Are you ready for your Poseidon moment?
Guy English, thank you for being here.
It's 5 o'clock on a Friday. Time for a couple of bourbons.
Good choice.
Good. Excellent choice.
Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. As always, if you'd like to send us a letter, drop us a line at biff@theincompo.com or at biff@zeppelin.flights on Mastodon. We love hearing from you, and we love talking about your questions on the letter page. We'll be back next week with our Loki finale recap, but until then, Excelsior. Bye.
Did you think you had something like this? We don't have a sign-off. I don't know what we say.
I know.
Well, we
don't have a sign-off. And I realized that midway through the sentence. It's like, nope, can't save it.